Welcome to Multifamily Real Estate Investing, presented by Mara Poling. My name is Pat Poling. I am the founder and CEO of Mara Poling, and I'm happy to be with you this week as we continue our series on the multifamily investment thesis that we operate by. This week, value add, the quote-unquote secret sauce in multifamily investing. If there is some secret, some magic that makes investing in multifamily work, it is value add. It's the sixth step in our investment thesis. No more important than any of the others, it is one of the more exciting. And you all ask a lot of questions about it. So that's what we're going to talk about this week. If you have questions in particular, because today's session has a little bit of math in it, I've got a handout for you. Shoot me an email, pat@marapoling.com. I can register you for weekly updates on our podcast, and you'll get a handout whenever we're going to have a handout for the podcast. Again, pat@marapoling.com. Lots of great webinars underway, in particular around our new offerings. If you have any questions about those, swing by marapoling.com. The Learning Center is where you can register for upcoming webinars. The offerings page will have summaries of each of the offerings and links to information kits so you can learn more. Okay, let's talk about value add. So I'm kind of kidding when I say it's the secret sauce. It's not really much of a secret. There are some components of value add, though, that I don't see consistently applied by everyone in the industry. And those are some of the things that I want to bring forward. We're going to do some math. We're going to walk through how a value add actually works and how it doesn't work. But let's start with value add. What does that mean? Well, many people interpret that as it means throwing a bunch of money into a property, interiors, maybe some other things, and then raising everybody's rent. That may be what occurs. That's not the impetus for it or the logic behind it in our estimation, in our investment thesis. And it starts with the definition of value. So I would encourage you to think about value in terms of real value, and it's defined by tenants, not by property managers, not by asset managers, not by investors, not by the competitive environment. It's defined by tenants. I'll tell you a little story, has nothing to do with value add. I think it underscores this value proposition I'm suggesting. Many years ago, when I was doing real estate work, I had a client that asked me one day, can you do X for me? And I said, yeah, I think we could do that. It was adding some services to the asset management work we were already doing for them. I said, yeah, let me talk to the team. We'll put a proposal together and I'll get it to you. And their response was, oh, well, I've got to pay for that. I thought it would just be part of the package. And I said, well, yeah, it's an addition to the scope. So we'll need to work something out. Oh, well, then I don't care about it if I have to pay for it. That is the definition of value. If someone is not willing to pay for whatever that item of alleged value is, then it's not value. It's not real value. And who defines that? Well, the customer. Whether it's in a retail environment or manufacturing to a distributor or an end user or a tenant, that's who defines real value. And not with surveys. I've seen surveys done. I think we've even done a few surveys where we ask people, would you like us to do this or this if we're going to add something to the property? It's interesting information. I don't think it directly translates into an understanding of value. Another way to look at it is, if we are going to make an investment in X, whatever that might be, whether it's an improvement to an interior or some other amenity added to the property or a service added to the property, how is it going to affect our financials? If the answer is, well, it isn't, then we don't do it. And that doesn't mean we don't do things that don't necessarily have a direct connection. So keeping the landscaping up or adding some new flowers, we're not charging tenants for flowers. Curb appeal, though, helps bring more people into the property, which helps us drive occupancy, and occupancy is what leads to rent growth. So there is a way you can connect those dots. But if you can't connect the dots, there's not really any value in it. So real value is defined by tenants. Another way to understand value add is to understand what it isn't. It is not basic expectations. Tenants expect their units to be clean when they move in. They expect the appliances to work. They expect the roof not to leak on them. They expect the windows to close and to open. They expect to have a place to park their vehicle, and many, many more expectations. Those are the basic expectations of the deal. Mr. Tenant or Mrs. Tenant, I'm going to give you a place to live with all of these items, and you're going to give me money every month. That's essentially the business transaction that we enter into. So if I spend money fixing the roofs or putting new roofs on, I don't get to go to tenants and say, hey, great news, you've got new roofs, you're going to need to pay me more rent now. It's not going to work that way. So real value defined by tenants, not basic expectations. Why do we care about value add? Value add is one of a handful of revenue generating strategies that will drive growth in NOI by driving growth in revenues, and growing NOI is what generates incremental cash and equity growth. That's why we care about value add. Now, it's not the only strategy that does that. I mentioned occupancy drives rent. So there are strategies that we employ to improve and drive our occupancy performance. And as we do that, we can move rents separate from rents or income that we might generate from something in the value add world. We also, without doing anything, can move rents on units that are not at the current market rate if we are able to rent that unit at the market rate should that tenant say, no, thank you, I don't want to pay that increase. And there are other strategies. So there are many ways that we can drive revenue. Value add is an important one. Let's do a little bit of math. And in doing the math, we're also going to touch on a subject I mentioned a moment ago, and that is not just how does value add work, but how does it not work? There are many, many things we can do that add value that we have data on from tenants that tell us these are real value items. And some of them range from interior finishes like a backsplash and a new countertop, painted cabinets, upgraded appliances, vinyl flooring throughout, pet yards for those units that are on the first floor, as well as amenities that are outside of the individual units. So a fitness center, a kitchen located outside at the pool, a grill area. Those are all items that tenants tell us they like, not by coming in and saying, thank you for doing that, we really like it, although some may, but by paying for those items. And we can draw a direct line between we made that investment and we were able to do this with revenue. Almost at the top of that list, and I say almost because maybe something else really is at the top of the list, but this probably is, are in-unit washer dryers. Everybody wants to be able to do their laundry in the privacy of their own unit and at any time that they want. That's the value proposition. It's not having a washer dryer. It's having those two abilities. It's easier to do it in your unit. You don't have to go mess with the laundry room, and I can do it whenever I want. If I want to get up at 6 a.m. and do laundry, if I want to do my laundry at 11 o'clock at night, I can do that. So that's a really valuable tool to use. So how does that work as a value add? So the assumption we're going to make is that we deploy washer dryers in units, and these are units that already have hookups and a space, right? So there's a closet generally where we can put a washer dryer. They might be a side-by-side, it might be a stackable unit, and that we're going to be able to generate $50 a month in incremental revenue in those units that have washer dryers. We're also going to spend about $2,000 putting the washer dryer in, and we're going to have some maintenance costs. So let's walk through that math and see how this works. This is the math we would use for any amenity or service or interior improvement that we would make. So we start with, we've got $50 a month. We want to annualize these numbers, so we multiply that times 12. That gives us $600. So $600 a year. Wow, that's great. $600 in incremental NOI. Well, hold on. We're not done. That would assume that every unit is occupied all year long. And we know that is not going to be the case. On average, we would like them to be occupied 93 to 97%. So let's use 90% to be conservative. 90% of $600 is $540 a year. So we have $540 in incremental NOI. Again, hang on. These are going to be new units, but over time, they're going to need maintenance. They're going to have problems. They're going to get backed up. They're going to get clogged. The drain is going to have an issue. There will be issues that need to be addressed. So let's make an assumption that we're going to spend $100 a year on every washer dryer in order to keep them operating well. Now, it's possible that we have some units that we don't touch during a 12-month period of time and others that we do more work with. So we're just going to use that $100 in this instance. Now we're down to $440 in incremental NOI. So about $160 less than that $600 we started with. Is this still a good investment? Well, let's take a look and do some more math to figure out what that is. So $440 in incremental NOI pretty much falls all the way through to cash. Our debt service isn't going to be any higher. We didn't borrow money to do this. Our loan didn't change. So we're paying the same mortgage that we were paying before. So that doesn't take any of this $440. If it's a passive investment with a firm like Mara Poling, there are asset management fees that generally come out at this step of the process. Those really don't change for something like this. It's possible. Ours don't. It's possible you're invested with somebody who does have a variable asset management fee, but we're going to assume that it doesn't because we don't. So that $440 goes straight to cash. That is extra cash that we distribute. So what's the return? Well, we invested $2,000 and we receive $440 a year. That is a 22% cash on cash return. And if you're familiar with our investment targets, we, on our total return fund, as an example, generally target cash returns in the area of the preferred return. So that's around 8%, maybe 9%, maybe a little under 8%, 6 to 7%, somewhere in there. This is 22%. It's 2.5 almost three times what we would target. This is one of the ways that value add increases the performance of the asset over time in order to help you achieve your objectives. Well, that's cash. What about the other return, which is equity growth? So we have our $440 in incremental NOI. In the market that we're doing this, we're just using an example, we're in the neighborhood of a 6 cap, for those of you that like using cap rates. That basically means that a dollar of NOI is worth $17 in value. So $17 times $440 in annual incremental NOI is $7,480. Now, that's not equity growth, because remember, we spent $2,000 to do this. So we have to subtract the $2,000. We are left with $5,480 in equity growth. On a $2,000 investment, that's a 274% return. That's fantastic, but a little misleading, because that's the entire return in one snapshot of time. And we're going to own this asset over time, say 5 years. So we divide that $274 by 5 years, and what we get is a 55% average annual equity growth. So 55 plus 22, a total return, a total incremental return of over 75%. And we're targeting high teens, maybe right around 20, something like that. This is a great value add. We like it because it not only increases the value of the property, but it also generates more cash. It's a fairly easy project to deploy. The hookups are already in the unit. We simply need to source the washer dryer, take them into the unit, plug them in, connect a couple of hoses, a hot water and a cold water feed, and connect the drain. And we're done. And we do that once for that unit, and then it simply runs going forward. So we really like it. And as I said, tenants find value in it. And how do we know? Because they pay this extra money for it. If we have a unit that has a washer dryer in it, and we have the exact same floor plan, and it just doesn't have one because we haven't put it in yet, and that's not uncommon, it is very, very often that the unit with the washer dryer rents and the other one stays vacant. It's one of the reasons why we generally deploy washer dryers into units that have hookups when we have the opportunity to do so. So that's wonderful. I mentioned, though, that there's times when a value add project doesn't work. And so we would want to do this math in advance of making that decision. And if this was the actual analysis, we would walk away saying, great, let's go get $50,000 and we can put 25 sets of washer dryers in place and make ourselves some money and have a bunch of happy tenants. What if we didn't have hookups? What if we had units? Maybe some units have hookups, but some units don't. And we're going to assume that they have a closet somewhere that could in fact hold a washer dryer. Again, maybe a stacked unit or a side by side. Well, we can add hookups. We go in and we cut the drywall open, and we would ideally locate this on a wall adjacent to plumbing. So maybe the bathroom, we might even have it in the bathroom, and we would then tie into the hot and cold water feeds, and we would tie into the drain, and then we'd have hookups, and then we could bring the washer dryer in. So it's not going to cost $2,000. We're going to generate the same $50. So how much is it going to cost? Well, I've seen budgets for adding hookups that are $2,000, $2,500, something in that range. And we've never added hookups because that's not the experience that we see when we look around the marketplace. One, it can be a lot more complicated than what I just described. It might be difficult to hook into a unit. There's the issue of, is the dryer going to vent somewhere and how is it going to vent? There may not be hot and cold water feeds exactly where we need them. And it may not fit perfectly in the closet that we've identified. So maybe a couple thousand dollars turns into $5,000. So now I'm spending $7,000 to put this in. Well, remember, my incremental value was $7,480. So if I'm spending $7,000 to put it in, I'm not getting any equity growth out of it. And my $440 in incremental cash on an annual basis, let's do that math, is now 6%. That's not moving my needle. Can I ask the tenant to pay more? Why are they going to pay more? It's worth $50 to have the washer dryer in the unit. The fact that it costs me more doesn't add any value to the tenant's experience. And the last piece of this is I would be very concerned about opening a can of worms. As soon as you start cutting into a wall, whatever's in that wall, you get to deal with. And it could be anything under the sun. What if you get into the wall and you find mold? What if you find asbestos and it's friable, meaning it's airborne, and now you have to pay for an abatement? What if you get into the wall and you find rot or an infestation? Now, you can make a legitimate argument that, well, you should be dealing with mold anyway and rot and so on. And that's true. I don't know where it is, unless it's on the surface somewhere or visible in some manner. I don't know where it is. And I'm not going to cut holes in every wall of every unit just to see if there's something there. So now that I know it's there, I need to address it. And my $7,000 in expense becomes $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000. And now I'm losing money doing this. So in our experience, putting washer dryers in units that have hookups, smart move. Good value add, gets a really solid return. Tenants like it. It's real value. Go for it. And if you have to add hookups, we say pass. We don't think that's a wise investment. It has risk associated with it. And as you all know, our focus is on security and stability, not opening some can of worms that's going to be very difficult for us to deal with over time. Every value add investment needs to be looked at in this manner. I want to add pet yards. All right, how do you do that? Where does the fence go? How tall is the fence? If landscaping is now inside that yard, who maintains it? If we maintain it, how do we maintain it? If the tenant maintains it, how do we know the tenant's actually going to maintain it? There's a lot of things that need to be understood. Having said all that, that is an amenity that we add when we have the opportunity to do it. Our analysis says it's a reasonable risk to take on and one that can generate a nice return, as is upgraded appliances, vinyl flooring, all of the things that I mentioned at the top of this session. So my apologies for maybe more math than we typically talk about. I hope that was easy for you to follow along with. Tried to take it step by step. And if you'd like to see the math, as I said, I've got a handout. Just shoot me an email and I'm happy to share it with you. The next time we gather, we are going to, because we're doing our investment thesis series every other week. So next week, we'll have a different topic for us. Then we're going to come back and we're going to start wrapping up our thesis. We're going to talk about working the cycle, meaning the entire cycle of asset ownership. We're then going to take a look at 1031 chains, the value in creating them and how you create them, and what happens if you get trapped in 1031 jail. And the final component of the investment thesis is, so where do I start? Where do I take this thesis that Mara Poling uses and apply that to my investment life, whether I'm a passive investor or an active investor with my own portfolio, or I do both? So that's very exciting that we're going to touch on all of that. That'll occur over the next several weeks. I hope that you'll join us for those. And please join us next week for another episode of Multifamily Real Estate Investing, presented by Mara Poling.